The City Club of Boise is a nonpartisan forum dedicated to free speech and the open exchange of ideas on issues critical to the Intermountain Northwest. Its motto is, things happen when people start talking. You can find information regarding forums, salons, and tours at cityclubofboise.org. The premier sponsor for the City Club is AARP. Annual sponsors include Northwest Nazarene University and the Idaho Humanities Council. The moderator for today's forum is Greg Hahn.
Hello, and welcome to today's City Club of Boise Forum, featuring four candidates running for two seats on the Ada County Commission. I'm Greg Hahn, a board member at the City Club and today's moderator. I want to welcome our radio listeners today. They're joining us via Boise State Public Radio on KBSX 91.5 and its affiliates throughout southern Idaho and northern Nevada. I'd like to thank our media partners, Boise State Public Radio again, 670 KBOI and the Idaho Statesman and Peppershock Media, as well as our forum series sponsors, Micron Technology and Echelon Group. Today's forum chair is Julia Runberg. I want to thank our four candidates for joining us today. They're going to share their ideas and their vision for Idaho's largest county. And for those of you listening on the radio, you don't know this, we have a great crowd here. There's more than 100 students from Boise and Bora High Schools. So far, from what I can hear, they've mostly set aside their fierce athletics rivalry, at least for a few minutes. And we'll get engaged in local issues and discussions. I want to welcome all of the students to the City Club as well. And I remind both the folks up here and the folks in the audience and the folks listening on the radio, this isn't really a debate. It's important to the City Club, the distinction between a forum and a debate, because the City Club's goals and ideals are all about tackling an engaged and civil dialogue and looking at the issues facing our country today, and those are going to challenge us in the future. As Dottie Stimson said, you know, nothing happens till people start talking, and that's what we try to do here in the City Club, is get people talking. Now, before I turn the floor over to the four candidates and give them each 2 minutes to introduce themselves, I want to encourage all of you in the physical audience to fill out your questions, those little cards on the table. If you don't do it, I'm just going to just be up here rambling for a while, and we've seen that before probably. So the quicker you can get those in, the better. We're going to be at the Q&A in just about 8 minutes, so don't wait. Now, a quick primer. We got two races in the Ada County Commission. In District 1, incumbent Jim Tibbs, who's a Republican, is facing Democratic challenger Diana Lacciando. Mr. Tibbs has served on the commission since 2013. He had a 34-year career in the Boise Police Department. He was an investigator in Canyon County, a Boise City Councilman, chairman of the State Board of Corrections, and Idaho's first drug czar. Ms. Lacciando spent close to 5 years directing the community partnerships for the city of Boise, maybe most visibly tackling homelessness in the city through Housing and Homelessness Roundtable in 2015 and the Housing First effort that came out of the discussions that she helped lead. In District 3, and I should point out these are districts, but are open, everybody votes in all the districts, right? So that's like the county commission thing we have to remember every few years. There's three of them. They each represent, they're in different districts, but we all vote for all of them. So everybody represents all of us in the county. So over in District 3, Republican Sharon Allman faces Democrat Kendra Kenyon. Ms. Allman served in this very seat for a couple of terms before, not the last couple, but she started running for the commission back in her 20s. A lot of us who've been around a long time have watched her over the years, been really involved. She's been a vocal advocate on sewer installation rates, water rates, trash hauling, school improvements, emergency management, budget, you name it. She's been involved. Dr. Kenyon sports degrees from all three of Idaho's public universities, which is always something we like to see, and has spent 30 years working to help government agencies, nonprofits, and businesses achieve organizational excellence. I think she's pretty involved in both Kiwanis and Rotary Club and really engaged in the community. So right before we sat down, we flipped a little coin. The only time that we'll go in order is now at the beginning when everybody introduces themselves. And it will go from Jim, Diana, Kendra, Sharon. So we'll, you guys help me remember that order and we'll get going. But I'm going to turn it over here to Jim Tibbs for a couple of minutes. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg, and welcome to everybody, especially the students. You should know that I went to both schools. That's not political pandering. That's the truth. I had my sophomore and junior year at Bora and my senior year at Boise High, class of 65, but I really did have a good time at both schools. I am not a Boise native. We moved here when I was 5 years old. And I've been here ever since. and went to Boise Schools. I went to three institutions also. I went to Boise Junior College, Boise College, and Boise State College. And graduated in 1970, and that's when I joined the police department. You've already heard my career sketch. What I want to emphasize is that county government is really different. A lot of people think that county government does some things, and they really don't. It's very different from city government, a lot different from state government, even though state government mandates what county government does, just about 95% of it. So this is really a great opportunity for us to help educate you about what county government is and what it is not. Thank you.
Great, thank you. I don't see frantic writing yet on these cards, folks. I was serious about the questions. All right, Diana Lacciando.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. Diana Lacciando. I am a fourth-generation Idahoan, a Boise native, and a working mom and wife. And I'm just so pleased to be with you here today. As was noted, I was the Director of Community Partnerships for about 5 years for the City of Boise, where I worked on issues to complex problems, such as homelessness, the opioid crisis, and strengthening our neighborhoods. When I see what's going on in this community, which is the fastest-growing state and the fastest-growing region, I believe we can't afford to operate under the status quo. We need to think through fresh solutions to tough problems. And I have experience bringing people together from multiple backgrounds, business, faith, nonprofit sectors, to tackle some of our most complex issues. And that's what I hope to bring to the table for this position. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And you guys are and you guys are tracking this, right? District 1. Those two are facing each other. The next two are in another race. Once every few years, where we become experts. All right, Ms. Kenyon. Dr. Kenyon. Oh,
thank you. I'm so excited to see everyone here, especially all of the high school students. Thanks for coming out. It really shows interest in the community and in local government. I'm also an Idaho native and really proud of that. I'm very, very passionate about our community. Raised two children here. My son teaches at Timberline. He's also a high school coach and teacher and a river guide on the Salmon River. And my daughter is at UC Davis. And they both are products, as well as myself, of the educational institutions here, which are wonderful. I did graduate from Boise State, from Idaho State, and University of Idaho. I am running because I really am passionate about bringing leadership to the table that can cooperate, that has integrity, and that can make decisions. Listening to people, I think empathy and kindness are traits that our leadership needs today. I think that we've all felt a lot of divisiveness in our community and divisiveness at large. And I, for one, think that locally we can bridge that gap. We can bring people together. And like Diana said, we are the fastest growing area in the country. And we can't afford, with this unprecedented growth, we can't afford to not work together. We have to be able to communicate effectively and respect each other. And that's why I'm running.
All right. Thank you. I cut off the applause earlier. I'm getting better at the this. All right, Ms. Ullman.
Thank you. I'm Sharon Ullman. Thank you so much all for being here. It's wonderful to see this many people interested in politics, especially a county-level race. As Commissioner Tibbs mentioned, a lot of people don't understand what county government does, and most of it is mandated under the Idaho Constitution or state law. I first became interested in county government when I had three young children at home and I was looking for something else to do, and had moved out to the Southwest, had a septic tank, and found that Boise City, according to the headlines, was going to force us to install sewer at a cost of $10,000 per household. Prior to that, I had attended the University of California at Berkeley, where I earned a degree in anthropology. So I had no idea that I would ever get involved in politics. But one issue led to another, led to another, led to frustration with our elected officials, and finally ended up running for the position, actually back in my 20s the first time, and eventually won and have served a couple of terms on the board. Because there might not be another opportunity today, I would like to talk about the court-appointed special advocates program. No matter who wins in November, the CASA program is short on volunteers, volunteer attorneys, and funding. The county provides a little bit of funding. The state provides a little bit of funding. We have got to support this program. In their fiscal year 2017, they actually dropped 59 children the courts wanted to have represented, but the resources were simply not there. We constitutionally provide representation through the public defender's office for people committed of who've been accused of committing crimes. The least we in our community should do is ensure that the children who are victims of either neglect or abuse have representation as they work their way through the court system. So please remember that. If you have some time, resources, money, friends who can volunteer, please step up and join the CASA program. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you all very much. Now, and you guys did a great job getting these questions rolling right away. I had a few stocked up just in case, but I think I'm going to dive right in. We got a few themes. The City Club had a discussion the other day on mental health and drugs and alcohol, and we'll get to that. Growth, I think, is from the number of questions here and from what I kind of hear out and about, one of the most important issues that I think we're all facing, whether we're in elected office or not. And I got a few growth questions, but I might just start a little bit, maybe kind of coming back down, starting with Sharon, about talking about your philosophy. You know, we're at this time right now where we're growing as fast, or it feels like, to those of us living here, maybe as fast as we've grown, even though we've been growing for a long time, pretty steadily. What is your kind of personal philosophy on, you know, what growth means in the county and what the role of county government is in kind of influencing that?
Okay, so growth or mental health?
No, I was getting to mental health later. Growth is the one. That was a foreshadowing. We call that foreshadowing.
Okay, growth. Ada County government only has jurisdiction in unincorporated Ada County for growth decisions. I would suggest that the Board of County Commissioners needs to spend more time actually listening to the folks from the neighborhoods and the neighborhood associations. I think that some of the projects that have been approved recently don't fit the community, don't fit in terms of the availability of roads, the availability of schools. And the county does not control roads. ITD, ACHD do roads. Public transportation, the county is not in the public transportation business. The county is not in the schools business. But by, for example, approving a new apartment complex, and I don't know what the total number of units is, but three-story tall apartments at the corner of Lake Hazel and Maple Grove, far away from any kind of services. That means more traffic, parking problems, school overcrowding. It doesn't fit the nature of the community. And I think that neighbors did show up and protest. Obviously, we have to be concerned about the affordability of housing, but I think there are more appropriate places for projects like that to go.
Right. Ms. Kenyon? Dr. Kenyon. I'm going to get that right.
No, that's fine. Kendra is fine. Kendra's fine.
We'll go by first names here for a while.
Yeah, living here most of my life, I, like you, am both, I think, excited about the growth, but also realize that we have challenges with this growth. And we have really such a beautiful place when you look around. We're all moving here, living here, staying here because of our wonderful amenities. We have clean air, clean water, beautiful river, open space, foothills. And so we certainly, as we look at growth, we want to make sure that we protect our most valued assets. And I think by doing that, we can't continue to work in our fiefdoms where you've got cities planning one thing, the county planning another thing, and everyone's sort of doing their own thing, basically. We all have to come together to create a common vision. And I think that one of the major roles of being county commissioner would be to be able to facilitate collaboration amongst all the entities that need to be sitting at the table, including neighborhood associations, so we can create and paint this beautiful picture of what we want our community to look like in 20 years or 30 years down the road. And then once we have that vision, then we can start to strategize about how to get there and implement that vision. But it takes all of us moving forward together, and I think that takes leadership that has passion and leadership that can create that vision and leadership that can inspire folks to be able to execute on that. Thank you.
Diana.
So growth is on the tip of everybody's tongue. And, you know, I've personally knocked on hundreds of doors throughout this campaign and have really been listening to what people are caring about. And I think there's a loss of a sense of place somewhat, and I can feel that. You know, I grew up on the corner of Maple Grove and Franklin before the mall was there for all the young people in the room. And so growth is inevitable, but it's how we grow and how we shape that growth. And what I would really like to see us do is to bring back the idea of a regional comprehensive plan. About 10 years ago, there was a move to create the Blueprint for Good Growth. And that was an idea where we were going to bring together all of the cities, the county, ACHD, and really set some standards for how we're going to grow and ask those communities to actually change some code so we'd hold them accountable. And that largely fell apart for lack of political will. I don't think we can afford to not have that type of effort, and that's something that I'm championing throughout this campaign. I know it's hard to do. I'm not naive about that, but I'm not willing to cede the idea that we can't do it.
Jim?
Thank you. It seems like we're focusing a lot on housing issues. Being the only city and county commissioner here, we have to deal with the tough decisions. And what we use to guide us in making those decisions, of course, is Idaho state law. And it's fundamental that when you're making land use decisions that you have to obey the law. Number two, we have a revised comprehensive plan. This Ada County 2025 was completed in just 2016. We also work with the cities and working with them effectively, I might add. Our staffs work great, very great together, and we agree to comply with their comprehensive plans. Not only do we have our own comprehensive plan, there's also six other comprehensive plans from each of the six cities in Ada County. And they're basically similar. But we have 1,000 people a month moving into Ada County, and they work here, and they have to live here. And the last statistic that I heard about housing is that there's only like a half a month of housing available. The realtors, if there's any realtors here, I apologize if this is wrong. I've always heard that you always like to have about 3 months of housing stock, a variety of housing stock, and that includes apartments, affordable housing, housing for the middle class, even the upper end homes. You need to have a variety. We've struggled with the decisions. We've heard testimony from the residents. And it's interesting, from a lot of people that live in these areas, they just bought their little slice of heaven just 5 years ago. And now, when somebody else is buying their slice of heaven, they don't want them there. So it really makes a difficult decision for the commissioners. We do the best that we can. It's not perfect. But we do the best that we can. We listen, and if there's an opportunity to modify the plans, we recommend that. Every application has a vetting process. The schools look at it. The highway district looks at it. And if they don't come back with any serious concerns, we're probably not going to have a huge problem with it. But I really respect the people that come out and testify for or against the different projects, because that really helps us make the decisions.
Thank you. Yeah, I agree. If housing seems to be the first place that kind of folks talk to, both kind of availability but then affordability for folks. Are there things, are there growth issues? And there's a few questions that sort of hint at this. Are there growth issues coming down the pike that we're just not really even starting to talk about? What are you thinking about that next piece of the puzzle that's coming from the 1,000 people a month, or however fast that growth is going? I'll just kind of randomly jump in. Sharon, have you?
Yeah, I have thought about that. And again, there has to be a balance in terms of what in this case, the county would approve as far as growth decisions. What I am seeing, and I have a strong interest in real estate, it's just kind of a hobby of mine to keep track of what's going on in the real estate market. And what I'm seeing is people are moving farther and farther outside of town, away from jobs, away from shopping, and so forth. And we're seeing the last places where people can afford to buy particularly a single-family home, if they can at all, we tend to see that now in Kuna and Star. And so I know people ask a lot of questions about public transportation. I see an opportunity arising from this where we can shuttle people in, we can bus people in, work with ACHD for more park and ride lots. I think it's unfortunate that people will be moving farther away from their places of employment, but I think that is one of the realities of what is happening with our housing prices today.
Right. Dr. Kenyon, what's the next growth issue?
Well, the next growth issue, well, I think it's keeping growth infrastructure keeping up with growth, whether that's transportation, water, sewer, fire, safety. But transportation for sure is on everyone's mind because as you drive into town and you drive on the freeways, we're all getting frustrated by what's happening out there with all the congestion. And I think that we need to work together with Compass right now, and I'd encourage everyone to go on their website. They're taking public opinion right now for their Communities in Motion plan, which is a comprehensive plan around transportation that does involve all of the entities that we're talking about today. So it's a really good plan, but they really need your public input. So I would encourage you to do that. The date to end the public comment, I believe, is the end of this month. Compass is the modeling and the long-term strategy metropolitan planning organization for Ada County and Canyon County and the surrounding area. And they have highlighted that over the next, I believe, 20 years, that there's an anticipated $5.4 billion that we will be in the hole to provide for prioritized pieces of transportation, roadways, bridges, bike paths, whatever it is, around transportation. So that's $5.4 billion that they don't know where the money's going to come from. That's really problematic. So I think that we can do all this great planning, but we have to be realistic and we have to figure out how we're going to budget for it, how we're going to pay for it, because it's like if you own your home, for example, and you put absolutely no money into maintenance or doing any improvements over 20, 30 years, you're going to have a big mess on your hands. And I think we need to get really realistic and creative about how we're going to pay for these projects that absolutely need to be happening now.
Jim, you want to jump in? Growth issue that maybe we aren't talking about yet or that you're seeing around the corner?
We're going to have to work together to get our arms around this, and we all struggle with it. Ada County is a member of Compass. They're a member of Valley Regional Transit, and this is the topic at every meeting. The issue is always money. Where's the money going to come from? And quite frankly, I don't think there's a city in the state of Idaho or a county that can afford to finance the needs, you know, for the necessary infrastructure. It's just not there. It's really up to the state and the federal government. Now, you've heard talk before about a local option tax. I believe that we need to vote on that as a community to see if maybe local option taxing can help with, if it's approved, to help with transportation issues. But that's a legislative issue. And again, the county, you're really limited in what you can do. Again, the mandates that we're responsible for, we see 1,200 people a day that go into the courthouse. And that's on top of the 300 jurors that are summoned. And jurors going in every day. And the 600 employees. So we have a lot of people there. How many of you in this room go down to the courthouse? Just raise your hand. How many of you? And do you have trouble finding a parking space? Well, that's a huge issue. It sounds pretty simple, but we don't have enough parking space at the courthouse. We've got to address that, and we do have a plan to address that. But it's really frustrating. We have to have accessibility for the folks that come down and do the business at the courthouse. That's just one aspect of growth. The infrastructure for Ada County, prisoners are sleeping on the floor at the jail. The coroner, the cooler, and the freezer, they're full. They got no space to put the bodies. So it's those kind of growth issues that really affect the county residents.
Thank you. Diana.
So I agree with Mr. Tibbs on really what we're seeing in terms of...
Would you say that
again? I did. Look at us being so congenial.
That's the city club at work here. That's what we're
like. We are seeing such exponential growth and some really tough challenges, and how are we going to tackle them? Where I disagree is on some of those opportunities and solutions. And I do think it starts with land use, because when we approve developments such as Dry Creek, such as Avamore, that are disconnected from existing resources, fire, police, roads, it costs all of us more money to provide services out to those areas. And so, you know, while there are some statutory challenges around that I'm sure Mr. Tibbs is very familiar with, I just want to put it on the record that I am not supportive of leapfrog developments that are out in the county, and that's where the county has some purview. The second piece about growth in the jail, we're going to need a new jail. And I know during the current budget cycle, the commission was looking at purchasing land for a new jail. We are growing exponentially again. That means we are going to have more folks who need to go to jail. But we also need to be looking upstream at how we can keep some of those folks out of the jail. On any given night, there are 100 people in the Ada County Jail who are experiencing homelessness. And while some of those folks have committed serious enough crimes that they need to be there, some of them haven't. They're there because of trespassing. They're there because of an open container law. And we pay $96 a day to house them in jail. That's why it's been so disappointing for me that our current commissioners have not shown up at our existing housing and homelessness roundtable for the last 2 years. While the county cannot control everything and is not responsible for everything, it's incumbent upon county commissioners to show up, to partner with business, faith, and nonprofit leaders to tackle those solutions together.
Right. Jim wanted to respond a little bit, but I'm going to ask this a question from Boise High. Thanks for putting Boise High on there. Now I know where it's coming from. That it echoes that. The question is, how are you going to limit development in the Boise foothills? And that's a little bit about what Diana said, that I think she would try to make a stronger stance against some of these places that you've just said might be, you know, kind of locked into law. You've got to, you know, following sure. The state law. So how do you respond?
Well, Diana mentioned Dry Creek. I think that's a really good example of what happens. Dry Creek originally was approved, I think, about 2007, maybe 2010. 3,600 homes, 100,000 square feet of commercial space. Nothing really ever happened with it. I don't even know if there's any opposition to the project. Well, along comes Hunter Homes. They buy the project. And what they do, and what Ada County commissioners had to deal with, is that they wanted to amend the project plan. So Hunter Homes reduced the number of homes down to 1,800 homes. They committed to funding infrastructure needs. They're going to build the roads. They're going to, you know, their own sewer system. They're really partnering in providing what sometimes taxpayers have to pay for. For me, and we couldn't go back, there was some opposition from a number of people. They wanted us to cancel the whole project. That wasn't the issue. We couldn't do that. The only issue that we could deal with is, are we going to approve or not the amended plan? Now, to me, reducing it from 3,600 homes to 1,800 homes seemed to be the right decision, especially they're going to include much more open space. They're going to have schools. They're going to have sewer system. They're going to improve the roads. I think, and they're going to have emergency services available at when it's needed. That sounds like a pretty good deal. That's how you plan. The issue about the leadership on the commission not showing up for meetings for the homeless roundtable, and I really respect Diana for the work that she's done with that. Ada County is a partner in that. We have, the commissioners can't make all the meetings. I wish we could. I'd love to get out of that building more often, but we can't. We're locked into a lot of meetings. But we are partners with the city. We have representatives for the commissioner's office attend those meetings. They brief us afterwards. We're financially involved. We've committed $250,000 for wraparound services. We were asked to contribute funding for the capital expenses. Would have loved to. Only one problem. It's unconstitutional. We can't do that. So we got a little creative, and we want to be a partner, and so that's how we came up with the $250,000 for wraparound services. Again, would have loved to have been at the meetings, couldn't do it, had representation. We're helping fund the project. Personally, I'm excited about it. I hope it's a success. Our attorneys helped develop the agreements, contracts that are necessary with the metrics so that we can measure the program to see if it's a success. Thank you.
I'm going to shift. We'll do a little bit shifting away from growth just because We could talk about it for like the next 7 hours. In fact, so you know, the City Club's Forums Committee is talking about a series on growth starting up here early next year. I'm looking at Jane, who just ducked behind the thing, so I can't. No, we're gonna get that done soon, and I know it's really a high topic of interest. And I never will, no one ever let me say that the folks in the City Club audience don't respond when you ask them the right questions, because the podium's about to break from the number of questions. So nice job, everyone. While we're at a little, about halfway through, I want to just remind the radio listeners what you're listening to. It's the City Club of Boise Forum, featuring the four candidates of the Ada County Commission. There are two races. In District 1 is Republican Jim Tibbs, who's facing Democrat Diana Lacciando. And in District 3 is Republican Sharon Olman facing Democrat Kendra Kenyon. Now, both of those districts are the folks throughout the entire county will vote in both races. My name is Greg Hahn. I'm moderating today. So I'm going to jump back over to District 3 for a second. And it's come up a bunch, and there are a lot of questions that kind of hint at this. ACHD controls roads. City of CUNA controls what happens on the other side of their line. You know, there are lots of different divisions tucked around who all have to work together. I'm hoping maybe starting with you, Kendra, can you talk a little bit about how do you think your sort of your past and your attitude and your skill set kind of puts you in a position, and I'm going to ask this of all four of you, to kind of try to influence that discussion. You have a lot of folks who've been elected by their people who now have to work together.
Thank you. Well, I think I'm uniquely suited for this. I do have a PhD that specializes in organizational leadership development, and I've run a management consulting firm for 25 years that specializes in bringing people to the table and helping them create really great cultures around collective visions. I've even worked overseas as an international peace builder, and I've worked with countries at war with each other who have had various disparate interests in how they're going to run their country, whether that's a common monetary system or school system or whatever. And I've managed to be able to facilitate collaboration with people actually packing heat and ready to shoot at each other, and they have been shooting at each other. So I'm up for the challenge here. I think it takes a temperament, not only education and experience, but it takes a temperament that you can make people feel safe and get people to identify what the common and core values are, what do we have in common, and not be divisive and not look at problems, but actually look for solutions. And I think I'm able to do that. I ran a regional county, 10-county council of governments here, and I worked with 10 county commissioners, and all of them, trust me, at times had various interests. And the whole goal was to leverage resources, reduce redundancies, work together better. And we all did that, and we all have great relationships. So I think I am uniquely suited for this position, especially right now when we need this kind of collaboration.
All right. Thank you. Sharon, I'll tailor the question for you, of course. For folks who don't know, I mean, you've been involved in some of these agencies since, you know, you were old enough to walk in the door, right?
Right, just about.
So, yeah, how, you know, can you talk a little bit about what you've learned over those years and how you see that role of influencing the other agencies or at least working with them?
I will. Let's start out. I have a question for the audience. Can we see a show of hands? How many people here live in multifamily housing, an apartment complex, a townhouse? There's a smattering of you. Okay, so I was at a Compass board meeting one day, and the staff, which normally does the work and presents, and then the elected officials have a conversation and make a decision, yes, we are going to go that direction or tweak that a little bit. And at a Compass board meeting, the board, and I don't remember the specific numbers, I'm sorry, but it was something like a goal of having about 40% of our population in the county within the next couple of decades live in multifamily housing. Now, I understand that's helpful for preserving farmland, preserving foothills. It makes transportation, public transit easier. But I asked the board, the entire Compass board of elected officials, how many of you folks live in multifamily housing? The only person who raised their hand was me. I was in multifamily housing because I had gotten divorced. I was a single mother of six children, the oldest of whom was just shy of 21 when I did get divorced. I did live in multifamily housing, and I was trying very hard to find housing that was in the appropriate commissioner district and school attendance zones so that my kids' lives wouldn't be disrupted. It sounds really good to plan stuff. I have watched through nearly three decades now, plans be created, groups come together, and you know where they end up? They end up on the shelf. They don't get implemented. People don't work together on doing these things. So the first step is to ensure that the plans actually take what the public wants into consideration, that it shouldn't be a staff saying, well, this is ideal. Ideal from a planning perspective isn't necessarily ideal for the community members and for the community in which we live. Then the second thing we need is a commitment to actually implement those plans, stick to those plans, and as Kendra points out, work together to see that that's happening.
Thank you. Jim, let's jump over to you. You've been a city councilman. You've been a county commissioner. Did you get along with both sides at all times in both those positions? How does that work?
You know, it's really interesting. I'm 48 years of public service, and I learned a long time ago that you have to collaborate. You have to cooperate to get anything done. And that, whether it was the police department, whether it was a city council, or whether on the Ada County Commission. Now, here's something. I don't know if you knew this or not. We all talk about what we want to do individually. Well, you know what? On a county commissioner, you got to have a buddy. It takes two. A single commissioner can't do anything.
But blow the whistle.
So what I'm saying is that you have to collaborate with fellow commissioners. We don't always agree. In fact, I don't want us all to agree. Quite often we disagree. I think we get a better product when we do and we work through it. Just like the use of foregone. As it turned out, I was an advocate of using it because I thought we had to. As we got close to completing the budget process, I found out we didn't need it, and I supported not using it. It changed the scenery altogether. But we work, Ada County, you have to work with the other elected officials. There's six other elected officials. I refer to them as dependent sovereign nations. And you have to respect that. You have to work with them. The commission is the one that approves their budget. You have to cooperate with them. You have to collaborate with them. The department heads that the commissioners are responsible for, there's liaison assignments. You have to cooperate with them. You have to collaborate with them. You're always looking for better ways to do the job. How do we become more efficient? How do we become more effective? You know, what are the evidence-based best practices in every department? And we look at those, and we work together. We also work with the cities. We work very well with the state. We have associations that we belong to. And you know, I think we'd all agree that in order to get anything meaningful done, you have to have collaborative efforts.
And Diana, while I'm slightly tailoring this question to everybody, can you just, through the lens of the work you did on the homelessness, not necessarily the outcome of that, but the process that involved, you know, bringing in folks and finding that collaboration, if you could kind of talk.
Sure. So it really starts from a baseline setting of understanding, you know, what's the reality of any current situation, whether it's homelessness or, for example, I was heavily involved in the Energize Our Neighborhoods effort up in the Vista neighborhood. Really a common language and framework for what's our reality? Can we agree on what we're all seeing? From there, it's researching best practices and building relationships. And while I have not spent as much time within government, I have spent a lot of time working across disciplines, so with businesses, with nonprofits, with different faith groups. And starting to build that trust so that when you do have a proposal or an idea that comes together, you have trust in the best intentions of the people that you're working with. And that's ultimately how we were able to fashion New Path Housing. I'm actually the person who presented to the county commissioners about their commitment. So it's about people trusting in the process and understanding that everyone has the best intentions to achieve a common goal for our community. You know, another area where I was able to achieve that through that Energize Our Neighborhoods efforts, some of you may be aware, Idaho is now one of six states that does not have public preschool. And, you know, there's lots of different debates about whether we should or we shouldn't. But when we look at the data, we saw in the city of Boise that in a particular neighborhood, in the Vista neighborhood, the children attending those schools were 30% less prepared when they got to kindergarten. And you talk to the teachers, and they say, we are behind from day one. The kids don't know their letters. They don't know their colors. and we're just so far behind in terms of just getting them ready to learn. So while pre-K is certainly not a city function, that didn't stop me, and it didn't stop the city of Boise. And we said, how can we partner? How can we work with businesses? How can we work with nonprofits? How can we work with the Boise School District? And ultimately, in 2015, we launched the Boise Pre-K Project at Hawthorne and Whitney Elementaries. And now those kids are 30% more prepared than their peers once they enter kindergarten. So I'm very proud of my work to work with people across diverse backgrounds to achieve a common vision and really execute on goals.
All right. So let's stay on this side of the table. I've got questions. These are the mental health, opioid crisis, even, you know, suicide, firearm safety. Let's talk. It's coming from high school students, from physicians. It's concern about this, I think, across the board. And I'll start with you, Jim. If you could talk a little bit, you know, someone asked specifically about Allenbaugh House, County Commission recent votes on that, and maybe kind of talking a little bit about what you see the county's role, what does comprehensive support for families recovering from drugs and alcohol look like, and what can the county do to expand that support, to support that support?
That's a big question, and with a variety of topics just within one. Again, I want to remind everybody what county government does. Some people think, well, county government's not even involved in the homeless issues. They're not involved in medical health issues. They're not involved in mental health issues. And that's just not true. Just this year, it started on Monday, we budgeted $10 million for the indigent program. That's for mental health as well as for medical financial assistance. And this year, or last year, was the first year that the county spent more money on mental health treatment than on medical treatment. It was $3.5 million for mental health and about $3.1 million for medical health. We pay the bills. There was an individual, to give you an example of what we see every Wednesday morning. We don't see the individuals, the hospitals file the appeals. The biggest bill I saw until 3 months ago was $1 million. County's responsible for $11,000, and then it goes to the state's catastrophic health fund. It's paid at the Medicaid rate, which is roughly about 50%. A few months ago, got one for $3 million. The bills are getting paid. We also committed $10 million for the public defense. There's a lot of folks that are struggling financially. They can take advantage of that program. We see a lot of homeless individuals that use that program, $10 million. And we also funded $3.2 million for Central District Health. Again, folks, they utilize that program. They don't have enough money. We have the community paramedics program that travel around the county working with people that have been recently released from the hospital to make sure that they're a vulnerable population, to make sure that they're taking their medication, doing their physical therapy. Maybe it's something the county shouldn't be doing, but we do it. We fund the program. Allenbaugh House, we also contribute. We contribute, I think it's almost $300,000 a year, and I hope that we continue doing that. I think it's a valuable resource. I ask a question of the nurse. She's the manager of the jail nursing program, and I ask her a question, does Allenbaugh House do any good? And she said, yes. And it was a strong yes. She said, the prisoners get out of jail. They don't have anywhere to go. If they need treatment, mental health, or substance abuse, and they go there. So it's a good program. I'm very proud to say that we continue to fund it. Did I touch them all?
I think, yeah, that was a pretty... I have like 7 question cards that I crammed into one, so nice job. And I'm only keeping it... I'm trying to, again, pair these so we keep in mind who's facing who, so it makes it easier on us on November 6th. It's the 6th, right? All right, Diane.
So I agree. The county has such a crucial, crucial role in these areas, and that's frankly why I'm running, working for the city of Boise, working on some of these issues. Often I'd get frustrated because it wasn't necessarily within our purview to address some of these issues. In terms of mental health and detox, I was one of the worker bees very involved in Allenbaugh House, and it's a big reason I'm running, because about this time last year, the commissioners did threaten to pull funding for Allenbaugh House. And without Allenbaugh House, folks don't have a place to go. They go to jail. They go to the ER. And we all end up footing the bill for that. I just had a woman reach out to me to tell me that Allenbaugh House did save her daughter's life. So it's a critically important resource. It's one that hopefully, over time, can be funded in a different way. Hopefully when Medicaid expands this fall, it can become an allowable service, and we won't have to foot the bill that way. But I'm troubled because even this year, while the commissioners did not defund Allenbaugh House, they did not keep pace with the increase that all the other cities and the hospital systems are. So everybody else voted to increase their budget, recognizing the rising opioid crisis. The county did not. At the same time, we have a new crisis center that recently opened last year, Pathways Crisis Center. And that's through funding from the state. And we're so appreciative of that, because that is a 24-hour crisis center. So when law enforcement needs to take somebody who might be a danger to themselves, and they don't really need to go to jail, and they don't really need to go to the ER, now they have a place to go. By statute, a county commissioner is supposed to sit on that board. But our current county commissioners have refused to take their seat. So this is what I'm talking about. Sometimes it's about getting outside of the walls of Ada County and working across partnerships, across divisions, to achieve a common goal and recognize that sometimes things that you're doing within the county, you have to work outside to really make a difference.
Jim, you wanted to respond real quick.
And just, you know, Diana, the last comment, were you referring to the Region 4 Mental Health Board?
I'm referring to Pathways Crisis Center.
Oh, I think I've already addressed that. Appreciate you caring about our attendance at the meetings, but you know, we funded it. We helped fund it.
You didn't fund it. The state is funding it.
Oh, the crisis center. No. Okay, I misunderstood. I thought you were talking about Region 4 Mental Health Board. So, and also, I want to make a point. You hear a lot of talk about people who go to jail. The Ada County Commission does not control who goes to jail. Those are the judges. And Ada County, the court system, has a great specialty court system, DUI court, mental health court, veterans court, domestic violence court, and some of them have been nationally recognized. So we're heavily invested in helping people out any way that we can. Also, the courts, the administrative court judge also has an opioid awareness program. I think it's a series of three or four events that have been held. The county coroner is also heavily invested in the opioid addiction problem, and she's heavily invested. She has an educational program. We just funded $80,000 to the county prosecutor to also start an opioid awareness program.
All right, thank you. Ms. Sharon, what's your take on the county's role in this?
So mental health, suicide prevention, I can speak to from a very personal perspective. My father's parents were German Jews. My father was born a German Jew. They were among the luckier people who managed to get out when my father was a young boy, but life was not the same. They got to the United States, but when my father was a teenager, within 3 years apart, his parents both committed suicide. So I understand the generational problems that causes, having been the granddaughter of two people who committed suicide. I did serve on the mental health board. Healthcare in general, including mental health, is of concern to me. I don't think we need more money. I think we need to redirect the resources that we have. Right now, the county, so when I was in office, I worked with Idaho State University Meridian campus and Central District Health, Idaho Department of Health and Welfare, and ultimately we pulled in also the low-cost and free clinics who also work with the hospitals. So we had basically all of the healthcare providers in the community working together on this program. And the county provided $100,000 to Idaho State University to use their various health sciences students to provide preventive health screenings, community health screenings, to people who came to the We didn't require them to fill out any paperwork for financial need. We simply said, if you need health care, if you would like to see if you have any kind of health problems, please show up at this date and this time. It was a win-win-win situation. We've got students who are receiving hands-on training. In fact, the Republican candidate for Nikki O'Neill in some of her lab courses was able to participate as a student in those community health screenings. We found people who had, for example, high blood pressure. They could be directed to specific appointments at the low-cost clinics to receive the care they needed before they had the stroke or the heart attack and ended up in the emergency room. So we're saving valuable emergency room space for people who really need it, but providing the availability of services rather than steering people, the only place they could go to get health care is the emergency room. I would like to see that program expand within Ada County and throughout the state. We are footing the bill, as Commissioner Tibbs said, the first $11,000, but when you've got $1 million bill for somebody who went to the ER because they had a heart attack or a whatever combination of health problems, we as state taxpayers are also paying that cost. It makes far more sense to me to expand some of the low-cost and free clinics, provide the urgent care that's needed, get the people out of the ER, divert those dollars from crisis care into prevention and personal responsibility. Help us have a healthier community. And this program is still in place, thank goodness, but it needs to be expanded. It needs somebody with the passion that I have to get involved and promote it and ensure that it has adequate funding, work with the stakeholders and really take that $10 million budget and start siphoning it off into prevention instead of ER care.
Thank you. Kendra.
Thank you. I wouldn't couch this as an opioid crisis, because what's happening, and I was speaking with our coroner yesterday, is when the opioids go away, people are turning to heroin. And when the heroin goes away, they're turning to methamphetamines. And if that goes away, they're turning to other drugs. And so I think we have to look at the whole picture here. And I've been deeply involved in the mental health field. I worked with Intermountain Hospital and Sage Behavioral Healthcare for decades, working on these problems way before the alumni house even was envisioned. And my belief is, and I agree with Sharon, it's got to be preventative. We can't keep spending money being reactive. When we have someone come in and into the system, the county system, and let's say the ambulance gets called, emergency services gets called because it appears to be maybe a heart attack or something like that, and it's not, it's a drug overdose, it impacts the entire system, from the sheriff's department, emergency services, the coroner. It's systemic. It's a systemic problem, and we have to do a better job of working with our youth and working with preventative facilities. And I agree, we can't keep footing the bill for high emergency costs. And if you vote for the Medicaid expansion, that's going to take some of the burden off of the county indigent fund. So I would encourage you to do that, because you're already paying federal tax dollars for those services anyway. And so if you're not going to vote yes, what you'll see is that indigent fund needing to be funded at a much higher level going forward, especially with the population increase that we're seeing.
Well, we're into the lightning round now, so that's my sort of warning to try to answer these as quickly as possible. So we still have about 5 or 7 minutes, but I do want to come. There's several questions here, and I'll, again, it's coming back over to you, Commissioner Tibbs, about the lawsuit with a former employee at the county commission. If you could talk a little bit about your perspective on that, and I'll let everybody kind of chime in on how they view that and how they'd maybe make decisions on similar issues.
I assume that you're talking about the Rich Wright case?
Yeah.
Okay, in case anybody was confused about that. Let me give you a little background first. Every new mayor, every new governor, two new commissioners, a new president, when they are elected to office, it's not uncommon for them to make changes. Sometimes it might happen the first day. Sometimes it could happen in a week or two or a month or whatever that elected official decides that they're going to do. In this particular case, with Mr. Wright, I had the opportunity to observe a lot of the operation of Ada County. I spent 6 months observing how people were working, ask a lot of questions about what they did as far as a job. And we decided, when I say we, Commissioner Case and I, decided that we wanted to make a change. Commissioner Issaquire was informed about it, and the change was we were going to reorganize. The bottom line was Mr. Wright's position was no longer needed. We felt that we could use the money somewhere else for a more critical area. And wasn't anything about performance. I know how this works because it's happened to me. When I was the drug czar, Governor Risch appointed me as the drug czar. When Governor Otter, who's still a very good friend of mine, decided he wanted to go a different direction, he unappointed me. That's what happens. That's okay. That's how the system works. So his services were no longer needed for Ada County. He did not resign, so he was terminated. The process took 4 years to finally go to court. He sued the county. The Ada County filed for summary judgment with a judge and won. Mr. Wright's attorney filed for reconsideration, and it was denied with prejudice. He filed an appeal with the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court split the baby. They dismissed three of the issues and sent the other two issues back to court to be tried. We went to a jury trial. The first day of the trial, the judge walked in. Jury hasn't been impaneled. They're all sitting there. And the judge announced that he was very sick. He was going.
I apologize because I threw this at you towards the end, but I do have to ask you to.
Okay. The short story is
my fault. Yeah, thank you.
We were found at fault. We paid him $1.7 million. We could have appealed it. We didn't. We wanted to have it over with. I'm still scratching my head on how it happened. Still, I can't figure it out. But that's what happened.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Diana, you want to? You don't have to comment on that in particular, but maybe a little bit about looking at staffing and again we're cutting it close, but I want to give everybody a shot at it.
As Commissioner Tibbs noted earlier, you know, it's going to be really important to have strong working relationships with anybody at the county, whether they're within the direct supervision of the commissioners, but all up and down all the other appointed areas. And I'm really proud to have built relationships across partisan divides with all kinds of different folks and feel confident that I can work with anybody who's already at the county. You know, ultimately, I can't speak to the specifics of that case and how it went down, but it is unfortunate because it cost county taxpayers almost $3 million on our property taxes to pay for that suit.
I worked with Rich Wright. I would have to say he was probably among the finest of the county's employees and was instrumental in keeping the Department of Administration organized. So the concept that the county was reorganizing and then brought in Larry Manili with a sportscaster background to replace Rich, who knew county government inside and out, Ada County government, was just, I believe, a very bad decision. A jury did find that it was a whistleblower termination for an act that Rich was legally required to take in his position. I think it's very unfortunate. My first position, full-time permanent job when I was 17 years old, was in HR. I think that anybody who wants to run for county commissioner needs to understand that there is a time, a place, and a way. The county has a wonderful group of civil attorneys to work with, and at the very least, one needs to go to that legal staff and say, hey, we'd like to fire this employee. Can you tell us if we can do this and how we go about it so that we don't get ourselves in legal trouble? I think any time that a board takes an action, particularly involving personnel, that needs to take place. There are political appointees that Commissioner Tibbs was talking about. There is a difference between a political appointee in the governor's office and an employee for the county who's got certain employment rights.
All right. Thank you. Kendra.
I'll cut mine a little bit short here. I've worked in this industry, like I said, for a long, long time, consulting with organizations, Hewlett-Packard, E-Trade Financial, large corporations around the world. and small corporations as well. I would never, ever, ever advise anyone coming in on your first day as a CEO of a company, this is CEO of Ada County, and making an organizational change. I think that's irresponsible.
Of course, we have City Club mugs for all four of these candidates, as we always do. And let's just give them a big round of applause. Thank you all.
You have been listening to the City Club of Boise, a public forum discussing important issues of the day in a nonpartisan, civil manner. The next City Club Lunch Forum is on Tuesday, the 23rd of October, and is about the possible expansion of Medicaid in Idaho in the coming election. You can find more on that event at cityclubofboise.org or by calling 208-371-2221. Connect on Facebook and Twitter by searching for City Club of Boise.